Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
We think we've come so far. Torture of heretics, burning of witches, all ancient history. Then, before you can blink an eye, suddenly it threatens to start all over again.
I believed her. I helped her. I did not see what she was.
Mr. Worf, villains who twirl their mustaches are easy to spot. Those who clothe themselves in good deeds are well camouflaged.
I think, after yesterday, people will not be so ready to trust her.
Maybe. But she, or someone like her, will always be with us, waiting for the right climate in which to flourish, spreading fear in the name of righteousness. Vigilance, Mr. Worf. That is the price we have to continually pay.
Okay, I think we've done our tomfoolery. Are you ready to start, Dan?
Pooley, pooley, pooley.
Can I push the button? Is it okay?
Pooley, pooley, pooley.
All right, because I'm trying to start the podcast, but you keep just saying...
Oh, now I'm the one keeping us from starting. I'm the one. Yeah, it's all me.
No, I've started it. See?
It's all me.
You see the clock on the
radio
station
wall? I've only been trying to
start
for the past 20 minutes.
I get that. And now we've started because the clock is going.
You're like, Dan, geez, I'm waiting, Dan.
Well, I was just asking because you kept saying pooley, pooley, pooley. I don't even know what that means.
I was ready. I've been ready since the moment I woke up this morning.
It's a fair point, audience. Dan has been ready. I have been dilly-dallying, as is my want. So all credit to you, Dan. Okay. Hello. Hi, everyone. This is Patrick, and that's Dan over there. He's the one who...
That's how it starts.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. Dan's been ready to go for a long time. Mm-hmm. What he's been ready for, and what I have not been ready for until now, is the beginning of our weekly podcast, which colloquially goes by the name It's Got Star Trek.
So, delighted to be here.
So it's Got Star Trek, aka the It's Got Star Trek podcast, if you just want to be more thoroughly descriptive.
How long does it take to like announce our name to people?
What do you mean?
The name of our podcast. Just like, hey, this is the It's Got Star Trek podcast. Like, how you stretch that out into like.
Oh, that was a rhetorical how
like
long.
I thought you four were. Four or five times the times the amount of words.
I thought you were trying to. I thought you were talking about like, you're looking for an average or something like that. I don't know. That'd be a fun experiment.
Yeah, I was asking literally. It's like, how long on average do you think it takes?
I did not realize you meant that rhetorically.
Yeah.
You were sort of subtly indicating that I was perhaps wasting your time, the audience's time, perhaps even my time.
Oh, this human is full of words.
Jabbering on about the It's Got Star Trek podcast. No, I don't know. Just want to make it clear to people.
Okay. Well, I don't want to spoil your flavor.
Yeah,
but
all good. No, it's
just wondering.
I respect constructive criticism.
I'm just rhetorically wondering.
I have no doubt that a not insignificant part of the audience right now is pissed off at me.
I think so.
Since you called me out on it, as I'm a child, I have no choice but to further extend the issue. Yeah.
What have I done?
Well, you should have known better.
I should have known better.
Yes, that's right. All right, everyone. Hello, and welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
He's lying.
No, don't you start, buddy. So yes, it's me, Patrick. And that's Dan over there.
And we've been over this.
Yes, I'm getting back into it because we got to sort of reset here because we have to explain that Jesse's not here tonight. Jesse is sick.
I know nothing about it.
He's sick of Dan's shit. That's what he told me. He's like, I can't stand that Dan fella.
No.
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 I gotta take a break from that Dan guy over there. Jesse's feeling a little under the weather today, so he could not join us. When Dan and I are arguing in favor of Picard's position, we'll just assume that Jesse would have taken the position of Admiral Satie.
We cannot allow ourselves to think that.
No, we can and we shall. That's the cost of not attending class. Sorry, Jesse. Jesse will no doubt recuperate and be joining us again next week. But in the meantime...
Oh, no.
Yes, in the meantime, Dan and I...
He was a giant.
Whoops. No, I didn't mean to press that last one.
Which one did you mean to press?
I didn't mean to press anything, actually.
Oh, did your finger just sort of slide across the board?
Yeah, it slid.
Okay. It surprised the hell out of me.
See... Okay, folks, this is the magic, right? The magic is that we're talking about a very serious episode this week. Important episode in the history of Star Trek, considered one of the best episodes of TNG by many folks. Contains some of Captain Picard's most quotable quotes. And many people will think of it as being acutely relevant for current times. And that episode is indeed The Drumhead. But that episode is a serious episode, but using Dan's magic, we're still able to get laughs out of it.
More than once.
Yeah, there you go. That was a small laugh, but that still illustrates the point. Thank you.
There wasn't much laughter in this episode.
No, but you've managed to squeeze some out in these first few minutes regardless.
Oh, but I mean laughter sound
not
effects.
Not in the episode.
literal laughter sound effects.
It would be kind of.
But you're talking about how the episode is serious and we're
you are recontextualizing audio clips from the episode in such a fashion
as to not give it the reverence it deserves.
No, I wasn't saying that at all. I mean, that's probably also true. But what I meant was that we are a comedy podcast, and sometimes when we are either tasked by the fans or the listeners or the algorithm, or in this case, by ourselves, with doing a particularly heavy episode.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We don't give it.
It's cool.
We're irreverent.
We can still get laughs out of it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We're irreverent.
One of my favorite episodes of Star Trek.
Is that wrong?
I don't think it's wrong.
I was saying we don't give it the reverence it deserves.
Yeah.
And you were saying, well, no, we're making jokes on a serious episode. That's kind of what I was saying. We're treating it with irreverence.
Yes, but you saying we're irreverent, I think, subtly semantically different than saying we are not treating it with reverence. Although I think both things can be true simultaneously.
Oh, nonsense.
I am perhaps being a little bit peculiar and specific.
That sounds like Judge Aaron Satie.
And he sounds like a jackass. All right, so this is episode 279 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. That's a lot of episodes.
279?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're getting close to three.
I mean, I'm not trying to toot our own horn. It's not much of a toot because it could be 279 shitty ass episodes. It's totally plausible. And I'm sure there's somebody out there, based on some of our reviews, would agree.
I mean, we must have had some good points here and there.
I think there's a couple good ones here and there. Really, yeah. I really do. I think here and there are some good episodes of the podcast. If you're a first time listener to the show, if something brought you this week, maybe you're thinking, I really want to hear this discussion about the Drumhead. It's relevant to the times we live in. It's a well-acted, well-written morality play about all sorts of things that are important to many of us. And if you listen to this episode and you think it's kind of stupid, try one of the other episodes. And if that doesn't work, just keep trying. Listen to them all. This is one of those situations you kind of got to listen to everything and then decide. But don't listen to the early stuff.
Wait, you're saying they have to listen to all of our stuff?
I'm saying that they can't dismiss us
by one episode alone.
By 270 episodes alone.
Wait a second. So in order to get the full effect, they have to listen to all 279.
No.
279, and you're saying 270 is not enough to judge us, so they have to listen to 271.
I mean, ideally, they would be listening to the bonus episodes, and really, truly, ideally, they'd
so
be
they
listening
cannot
to the
make
Patreon
a proper judgment
well.
Until they've heard all of our stuff.
Unless they already like us. If they think if they think we're great like now,
yeah.
Like, you know, 8 then, minutes
yeah,
of the podcast,
good. But
good
you know,
to go.
Sometimes it takes a minute to understand. Some people are like...
I'm just saying, give us a chance.
Yeah. I mean, some people are unable to properly
to feel
judge
joy? To feel
to,
joy?
To properly judge us. Yeah, which is which involves feeling joy, right? Yeah,
potentially.
Some people are unable to, and that's we should pity them. Yeah. Like the ones that like listen to us and haven't found one thing funny. Like we should feel sorry for those people because they are unable.
I do.
They're unable to do. They have not figured it out.
Yeah.
So that's on them. That's not on us. It's on them.
I agree. I do have sympathy for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Now, the good thing is that we're sad that Jesse couldn't join us today. On the other hand, when Jesse's not here, Jesse's a real taskmaster.
Yeah.
When Jesse's not here, it means Dan and I can play it a little light and loose.
Yeah.
Dan's light, I'm loose.
Hey.
I have not done anything wrong.
Not yet.
Oh, light and loose. I'm light. You're loose.
You're light. Yeah, exactly.
I thought I was loose. I think you're light and I'm loose.
Well, real world might differ from from the characters we'll be portraying on the podcast, right?
Mm.
You know, the light and loose podcast. It's got light and loose.
I beg your pardon.
Wait, what was that? What did you say?
I beg your pardon.
Oh, I beg your pardon. All right. It's
what are you saying?
Somewhat ironic that I couldn't understand.
Yeah.
What he was saying. All right.
Is it ironic that phonetic is not spelled phonetically?
I don't know that
it's
that
just
quite
stupid.
Qualifies as ironic.
I mean, it seems like it'd be about as ironic as not understanding someone when they say, I beg your pardon. It's similar. It's like the thing that's supposed to represent the thing is getting away with understanding the thing.
Yeah, I think it should also be like a little funny. Just a little bit.
It doesn't have to be funny.
I think there has to be a certain degree of whimsy for it to be ironic. Maybe not definition. Maybe it's not the definition, and I that's fair.
Like, but funny. But is it funny to like ironically, you wrote a poem that's so good that it burned your eyes out and your hands up so you couldn't write poetry anymore. That's ironic, right?
I don't think so. I think you've just conjured up some sort of twisted, horrific image for no particular reason.
Yeah, it's like you write poems that are so good that you can no longer write good poems, right?
Okay, I don't. It doesn't quite logically flow
or me. Yeah, or like it's ironic when you get kicked in the face by the very same nut that got crushed earlier in the day. Like your nut kicked you right in the face.
Your nut?
You got hit in the face with your nuts that got kicked by the very same day.
Okay. We've left irony behind and we've entered in a world of physical impossibilities.
You're in a boat and it makes you instead fly through the sky. That's ironic that you're in a boat that happens, it sinks in water but flies in the sky.
Okay. All right.
That's ironic, right?
Yeah. To the new audience.
That's kind of funny.
To the new audience, this is somewhat indicative of what you can expect in those previous 278 episodes.
Talk!
All right, Drumhead.
Something is wrong here, Mr. Wolf. I don't like what we have become.
I think we should get started.
Okay, well, I think it's worth mentioning that there are some heavy hitters in this episode. Other than the usual Star Trek crew, I was looking through the internet, and you know as IMDb I was looking through.
The Internet Movie Database?
Yes, sir. So Earl Billings was Admiral Thomas Henry.
Mm-hmm.
Earl Billings, we've seen him before. He was in American Splendor, apparently. He was in American Splendor.
All right.
As Mr. Boats.
Mr. Boats?
Yep.
Wait,
we were just talking about Mr. We were just Boats. Talking about Boats.
That sounds like I guess it is a made-up name. It's a movie character name, but I don't know. It sounds very silly.
It must be a mistake.
You go check out Mr. Boats
Mr.
over
Boats.
There. It's like, look at that guy over there standing on the dock, Mr. Boats.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
With your boats. He didn't even have a single line in this episode.
Who, Mr. Boats?
Yeah, Mr. Boats.
Oh, no. Well, at the end, well, he
his, just got up and
yeah,
left.
Yeah, his line was like looking serious the entire time during that whole like
did
last
he get,
scene.
Did he get paid the full rate? Because he didn't have any fucking lines.
Well, his face spoke enough. You saw his face.
His neck spoke
I
the
know.
Most.
His whole face was like
puffy neck.
It was all like stuck in one position. That entire episode, his face did not change.
It was implacable.
It didn't change one
you
bit.
You could not plaque him. It was an implacable face.
Not a micron did it move as far as my eyeballs could tell.
Is this one of those poems that's so good that your eyeballs fall out or whatever?
No, I'm not being ironic right now. Anyway, so, it also had Spencer Garrett as Simon Tarsus.
Yes.
Spencer Garrett, who you might know
from
a little old movie
called
a little old movie that I like to call, on a good day and a bad day, Yes Man.
Okay. All right.
And, oh, hey, how about this? Another little movie called, oh, I don't know, maybe Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Alan Kincaid. And he was in Air Force One.
What part did he play in Air Force One? Was he the airplane?
He was White House aide Thomas Lee.
Oh, all right. Probably makes more sense.
So there you go. Oh,
hey. What about Gene Simmons?
Oh, yeah. Not the Gene Simmons from Kiss. No, not that Gene Simmons. We're talking about the Gene Simmons who played Nora Satie. She was in a movie production of Guys and Dolls. She was in Spartacus.
Yes. Probably one of her most famous roles was in Spartacus.
And she was in a production of Hamlet as well. 1948 Hamlet, 1955 Guys and Dolls.
I think she did significantly more than that as well. She was on a lot of TV. Those are some of the big ones, though, that she got famous for.
Yeah. So I think, was there anyone else like worth mentioning?
What about the person who played Sabin? That face was one that I recognized, that gentleman's face, but I neglected to look him up.
Oh, that's the one guy I didn't look, because there was also Jadan. Jadan was Henry Warren. Oh, gosh, how do you say this? Warnick's?
Was that the Klingon fellow?
I don't know how you pronounce this. Warroniczz. I always forget how you're supposed to pronounce.
Warron.
And when it's...
Warron.
But if it's I-C-Z, sometimes they get confused how you're supposed to pronounce that.
Warronitz?
Isn't there some kind of weird pronunciation? It's like Warrenizial?
Worcestershire?
Worcestershire
sauce?
Worcestershire
sauce?
Well, he was helicopter pilot in Mr. Deeds.
All right.
Was
he the Klingon? Who was he? Clarify to me who
Sabin
he was.
Sabin?
No, not Sabin. The other guy.
No, right now I'm talking about Sabin.
Oh, I was confused.
Okay, sorry. Sabin was a helicopter pilot in Mr. Deeds.
What was the name of the actor again?
Bruce French. And he was also in the 1985 Chevy Chase version of Fletch, where he played a pathologist.
In Fletch or Fletch Lives?
Fletch.
All right, just Fletch, full stop.
So, keep in mind, Mr. Deeds, he played a helicopter pilot. Mm-hmm. For Fletch, he played pathologist. For Jurassic Part 3, he played science reporter.
All right, I think I might remember him from that, too.
And then Mission Impossible 3, he played minister. So this is...
He's got a range. This guy's got a range.
So from...
In this episode, he played a piece of shit.
And so in chronological order of movies that I see, the four movies I see in front of me, he was a pathologist, a science reporter, a helicopter pilot, and a minister. That's like every kid's like has at least one of those as their dream jobs. Well, probably not pathologist. Probably more like helicopter pilot, maybe science reporter.
You think a lot of kids are dreaming of being a minister?
Probably like more kids? Probably more than a pathologist.
Maybe. No, I don't know though. I don't know. A lot of kids watch The X-Files.
A lot of kids like, well, I don't know. I'm sure there's lots of people.
A lot of kids watch Quincy M.D.
Look, I think there's a lot of people that... There are a lot of people that are really into the idea of...
Oh, Quincy M.E., Medical Examiner.
I think if you were born into a religious environment, it would not be far-fetched to like want to aspire to be minister because it's a person of power in the community.
Of course. I don't think far-fetched by any means. I'm just thinking in raw numbers. It's just kind of... It was comical that you're like, kids want to be all these.
I'm just saying, like, these
I don't
are
even all... know any kids who want to be a helicopter pilot.
Oh, all kids want to be a helicopter pilot.
No, I know they want to be astronauts or racers.
No,
or, you know,
they
like,
want to be helicopter pilots.
Drive a fire
dude.
Truck. Helicopter? What about airplane pilot? Like a fighter jet pilot?
Yeah, or how about a helicopter pilot?
How about it?
Yeah.
Okay. What about the fella who played the Klingon?
I question your loyalty. I question your choices. I question your actions, Captain.
The Klingon
played
fella
backwards.
The Klingon fella was a sniveling Klingon.
And yes.
We don't get to see
Henry Warnix.
Too many sniveling Klingons, but I always enjoy a good solid
moronic
sniveling Klingon.
Yeah, he was a Klingon without honor.
Damn right he was without honor.
Yeah.
Although he would argue that he was doing the honorable thing by saving his culture.
He played Fora Gegan and Quarren in Star Trek Voyager.
Was that a Ferengi character or Kazon?
Which
episode?
I don't know. It just says Voyager. I mean, I can look at it, but it takes more research.
Don't worry about it.
It takes a lot of work to do what I'm trying to do.
It's good to know that he was in another Star Trek episode. Well, at least one. Was it just the one?
Well, it mentioned two names. I listed.
Ah, yes, you did. And so maybe two different episodes on Voyager.
Yeah, it's possible. It's really hard to fucking figure it out.
It's hard to fucking figure this shit out.
For a Gagan.
I do like how you say it. Anyway.
Oh, wait. Okay. Sniveling Klingon. For a Gagan is a Voth molecular paleontologist and member of the Circle of Archaeology who at one point was considered one of his species' most venerable scientists.
At one point.
Later in life, he was accused of heresy and was reassigned as a metallurgical scientist in Voyager.
That's fucked up.
So he's some kind of thing. And then the other guy was, now we have to know what Quarren is.
Well, that's the problem with these Wikipedia holes or whatever they call them.
Okay, it's in Wookapedia says there are some kind of...
Wookipedia?
Yeah, they're sometimes known by the derogatory nickname Squidheads, where a humanoid squid-like sentient species... It's like I think it's are like a sure it's like a Star Wars thing.
Yeah, you're looking at a Star Wars.
I know.
It just happens to be an overlap in the name between Star Wars and Star Trek, which happens from time to time.
But like, but I mean, it's spelled Q U A R R E N.
Q U A R R.
How many things are spelled that?
I don't know. It's sci-fi. What are you gonna do?
Okay, well,
there's only so many.
Okay,
names
there is. So there is a different. So the Star Wars. There is a Star Wars Quarren, which is a race of squid-like humanoid things.
All right.
And then there's Quarren from
which is a name played by Henry.
Oh my gosh.
Wuzzlefoot.
Oh, the Quarren were an industrious and technologically advanced species native to the planet Quora in the Delta Quadrant.
Okay.
So they're both like a culture of people or a culture of things. I don't know. Species is the right word. Well, so in Star Wars, there's squid people. In Voyager, or in Star Trek, they look like some kind of normal people with weird ridges on their face.
All right. Well, the next step, and maybe somebody in the audience can do this, is let us know which one came first. The Great Quarren Controversy.
The Great Quarren.
Indeed.
Chicken or the egg. Chicken or the egg.
So this episode starts out very cleverly, I think, as a mystery. The mystery is who is trying to fuck with the Enterprise, right? Right from the get-go, we're like, something's going on. We've heard about an explosion in engineering, and they've already got this Klingon guy. It's not like we see them suss him out. He's already like, he's gotten, and they're talking to him.
And he's really sticking with his lie. He's like, you did this thing. He's like, no, I didn't. And they're like, we saw you do it. They know you did.
I know, right?
Well, it must be a mistake.
I believe it was.
Must be a mistake.
William Shatner said at one point, if you're going to lie, you have to commit to it no matter what, no matter how much evidence somebody presents you to the other side. He's like, you just got to stick to it.
Evidence!
All right, good. Excellent.
Sometimes these buttons don't.
You got
appreciate me.
Dan's got them sticky buttons from time to time. But anyway, okay, so we've got this Klingon guy, and we're like, what's going on here? And everything about the way they've filmed this and set it up is to position the audience as assuming this guy is guilty of being involved with this explosion. And what the story is going to be is like, what's the greater thing? Who's the enemy? Who's giving him the orders? Is it a Romulan thing? Is that a red herring? What's going on? And I really enjoy the fact that they were able to structure the episode such that you think it's going to go a certain way, which puts you kind of in the same mindset as Worf a little bit, right? Because Worf is going to go down a bad path in this episode. Worf is very quick to becoming a fascist.
Yeah, well, this episode starts off as one of the few episodes where they listen to what Worf says, and he's like doing a good job, and like people are impressed by him because usually he's like makes this suggestion, and they're like, nah, we're not going to do this. But in this episode, he like found the evidence, and like Satie was like, wow,
evidence.
Yeah, good job. You did it.
I did it verbally.
Yeah, you did it verbally.
What you would do with a sound clip, I was forced to do verbally, artisanally crafted.
What he did or did not do is no one's concern but my own.
Man, Michael Dorn is so fucking great.
Yeah. So he started by like having his shit together, and then but then he like jumps over and he falls into the old trap of like, well, you know, if they're telling the truth, they should have nothing to hide.
Classic.
You know?
Yeah. So T states that outright at one point.
Yeah. So and that's when Picard goes like,
oh no.
Yeah. And he talks about like the seventh guarantee. Is that something they've talked about before?
I don't think so, but I clearly we're meant to create in our heads an analogy to you know, the Bill of Rights in the U.S. or the U.N. Convention of Rights, that sort of thing.
If a man were not afraid of the truth, he would answer.
Yeah. And then, well, the...
Like, or maybe he's just scared of cops.
Yeah.
Cops fucking suck. Dwarf.
I know. Yeah. Buddy. Well, but he didn't... what didn't help, though, is when Tarsus... when they asked him if he was Romulan and he didn't answer, it would have been fine if he was just like, I'm not going to answer. But instead he's like, I'm not going to answer because it might mean that you'll find out what the bad part about me. You know, it's like... Yes, no, technically, legally, you can't infer an answer from him saying no, because it might incriminate me. What was the line he used exactly?
Because it may incriminate me. Basically it.
Yeah. It was... Oh my God, my fingers don't work. On the advice of my counsel, I refuse to answer that question in that the answer may serve to incriminate me. Yeah. Like, he could have left that last half out.
He could have left
that. Because even though you can't infer it...
I'm sure Riker was, like, was just like, Jesus Christ, buddy.
Yeah,
what are you talking about?
Like, it's hard to get that out of your head. You can tell someone, like, strike that from the record, but you can't get that from your head.
But the real life analogy...
So wasn't helping him tell with
that. The real life analogy is that when somebody in a court case who's on the witness stand... wants to refuse to answer a question, they do need to invoke, in the United States, they invoke their Fifth Amendment right to not respond. And the implication in the Fifth Amendment is you're not required to testify against yourself.
Do you actually have to say, like, I plead the Fifth or I invoke the Fifth? You can probably just say, like, I don't want
to
answer.
I think you might have to assert, because you do have to assert certain rights. You have to assert your right to an attorney, you know, things like that. Otherwise,
you say assert a lot.
Assert. And then
you
cert.
Said, well, you said assert. You got to certify, assert, certain.
Wasn't cert, isn't that like a type of grandma mint?
Type of grandma mint.
Isn't that a grandma
type
mint?
Type of grandma.
Certs? Certs a type of grandma? I got to look that up.
I got me some of them grandma mints.
I remember my grandma having certs. Isn't that
I got
cert?
Me.
Yeah, certs. Wikipedia. Certs was a brand of breath mint that was noted for the frequent use of two mints in one in marketing.
I got me some of them certs.
I guess they don't make them anymore.
That's not an old person candy. It's just a candy. Some people
it's
think
it's not a candy. It's a breath mint, and it's for old people whose mouths are dying.
No, when
dead mouths.
A lot of people think like butterscotch is like an old person candy.
Butterscotch isn't old. Like Werther's. I love
no,
Werther's.
No, Werther's isn't butterscotch. No, like old. But Werther's like old
Werther's
butterscotch.
Original.
Like not Werther's. Like old original old butterscotch. Like just butterscotch.
Yeah, I think that's an old person.
Werther's
candy.
Is like a butterscotch candy. It's different. I'm talking about like butterscotch.
You're not making me
like,
think it's a young
like
man's
hard, like
candy.
Butterscotch candy is all wrapped in a wrapper.
You like some saltwater taffy too? Some flavorless saltwater taffy.
Taffy's fine. I never crave taffy, but if it's around, I'll eat it.
It's such a weird thing. And you know, it's interesting. A lot of people around the world don't even, they don't haven't experienced saltwater taffy because they've never been to like the East Coast beaches of the
I do not understand.
All right. So where were we? Klingon, saltwater taffy, certs.
Vigilance, Mr. Worf.
Hi, yes. So at the beginning of the episode, Worf is escorting this fella who...
You're a Damon, I'm a fellow. It's Stanley, I'll tell Stella. Sorry, I've had that in my head. The Simpsons does the musical version of A Streetcar Named Desire.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I did the thing.
No,
free association
thing. It's quite all right.
I did the thing where I free associated and then I start singing it. Yeah. And I couldn't stop singing it.
It is good that you explained it because
I didn't even know all the words.
Would have stood out there as a
nonsense. I know, it's like, you're a Damon, I'm a fellow. So look out... look out, something I'll tell Stella.
Yeah. All right. So this episode of Star Trek, the drumhead, Worf is escorting the Klingon fella, and we've been set up to not trust this Klingon fella. We think he's been up to something. We trust our people's data over his, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Worf then takes the guy into a room and roughs him up a little bit.
Stanley. I think his name is Stanley.
That's why Worf takes him in the room. Well, it's funny, too.
Oh, I like...
Worf is all like, oh, there's a door. Let's just go in here real quick. And then he all starts, like, you know, roughing up the guy.
Well, I like it. He gave him some, like, legit Klingon justice right there. Because, like, because Worf was all calm that whole walk. Because he knew in his mind, he's like, as soon as I get alone, I know I can get... when it's just us two... I can get away with that with it then because like if this guy ratted me out or something, he'd be a total chump and everyone would call him a chump. So like he knew that he could get away with it. And in fact, it would have been expected it probably in where he's from.
But here's the problem. And I think not the problem. I think this is very smartly done by the writers is really what Worf is doing is totally wrong. When it's like when in Law and Order, they'd be like, oh, to catch the murderer, we're going to completely abrogate his rights and break into his house illegally in search or something. What Worf was doing was cool and it was justified from a Klingon sense. But technically, you're not supposed to like take people into a secret room as a security guy and then strangle them and threaten their lives. What I'm saying is that's an indicator where, again, they've positioned the audience to be like, yeah, fuck yeah, Worf. You show him, Worf. Mm-hmm. But it's also showing us that Worf is already down that path of, yeah, but I'm willing to like do anything to protect the Enterprise.
I see that argument. When I saw it, I always thought of it more just like more true to how Klingons would act in such a situation around
you.
No, it's just like it's the same reason as in order to become captain, like one way to become captain in a Klingon ship is by to attack and kill your leader.
We do need to take a quick break, but when we come back, Dan will continue to defend his position.
Dan is stupid and he wants to beat up everybody and he wants to shoot everyone in the face.
He admitted it. We will be right back.
Very well. But let us put this to rest as quickly as possible.
And we're back!
We're waiting, Mr. Tarsus.
All right. Well, that works.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. LaForge.
That was an angry yes from Picard. It's hard to tell out of context, but he was in a bad place right here.
Yes, Mr. LaForge.
What I was saying about the Worf.
Worf.
Worf. Okay, now, here's the thing. Similar to how Klingons, one way to become captain of the ship is by attacking and killing their captain, right? That's just the Klingon way. Mm-hmm. This is also like a Klingon way. And not only that, this dude was kind of insulting Worf's honor, and he was being, was being snivelly about it. He was like, nobody knows your name back on the planet, by the way. Nobody knows who you are.
Well, but he was being manipulative. Well, he laid that down in order to have that in the offer.
Well, what I'm saying is, I'm not done. What I'm saying is, is that guy was basically, Jadon goes up to him and he's taking him in. The guy's like, you know, nobody on the planet knows even who you are anymore. You're like total nobodies. Meh. And then he goes, you know, if you hang out with me, like I know some people. I can get people to give you honor again. And like it's totally condescending. It's shitting on Worf. It's also there's something sniveling about it because it's like, I'm going to use my connections to give you honor. It just sounds all like snidely.
It's transactional honor, which is not honor.
No, it's almost
by definition.
It almost sounds like his dad like owns the honor bank or something, and his dad's going to hook him up with some honor to give to Worf. And like Worf is like, that is not how you get honor, is through these sort of like weak methods. You know what I mean? And that's what he was doing. He was using a weak method to try to like bargain with Worf. He's like, you're not even like a Klingon bargainer. And so not only did he insult his honor, but he was also being a dick. And like, and in Klingon world, that's what you do, is you're like, oh, I'm gonna you better shut your mouth, buddy.
Because
court cases can be solved with bat lift matches and shit.
I agree in the Klingon context. However, I also think that older, wiser Worf would not have essentially fallen for this bait. And again, later in the episode, there's almost a point where Worf is about to take some bait and Picard waves him off. And so Worf is like learned by that point. But in this case, because the really awesome thing for Worf to have done, it's not cinematic, it's not great for the story, the awesome thing would have been to completely ignore him and be like, you're a meaningless person. None of what you say is any meaning to me.
But I think in Klingon culture, if somebody insults your honor, it's you have to like beat him up.
Yeah, but I don't know. That's, yes, you're right. I'm not disagreeing with you on that point. I just think it's lame. It's a lame culture. A lot about Klingon culture is stupid and lame. And in theory, Worf really oughtn't be doing that in the Starfleet officer context. I know it actually makes sense in the story. I'm arguing that part of the point of it is to show that Worf, he cares. He does care about this, and a more enlightened version of Worf wouldn't care about this. But it's
perhaps important. I should reevaluate that behavior.
It's important for his growth. And yes, Picard, being able to evaluate his own decision making. Another wonderful example of Star Trek modeling good behavior.
Yeah, and all the back and forth between him and Satie was like a chess match, like that whole time. And that was actually kind of a move, because she was trying to call him out and say, like, you know, well, it was like he was saying you shouldn't use the Beta Z for this kind of stuff. And then she's like, well, wouldn't you use a Beta Z if you needed?
You've got your Beta Z.
She's like, wouldn't you use a Beta Z if you wanted to know something? And so she knew, Picard knew that, like, she got him on that logic bit. And so he has two choices. Either he can try to talk his way out of it and say, no, I didn't. Or he can accept that and absorb it by saying, you know what? You're right. I think I should change that tactic. That puts him on the high road again.
You bring up an interesting point, because yes, it can be viewed as a move. He's just doing the right thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think he did it dishonestly. No, but it is Picard.
But it is interesting to think of it from that angle as well. Mm-hmm. Because it's Picard, because of what we know of Picard, we're assuming, I think quite correctly, that he's not doing it as a maneuver, but rather because it is actually the right way to think, that, you know. And he doesn't say he's going to change his mind, but he says reevaluate, kind of take a look at it, which is also kind of a mealy-mouthed way to do it. But anyway, that's beside the point. All right, so Worf and the dude, blah blah blah,
blah blah blah. Worf and the dude, blah blah blah.
Now, normally we're programmed to trust Data, Geordi, all our people. Mm-hmm. We're like, yeah, they're going to be right. And it's not that they were wrong, because they never stated anything outright, but they definitely, at the beginning of this episode, which is very helpful to the plot, were all about this being something suspicious. They're like, this is weird. Everything looked normal. We don't get how this would be an accident. Now, it turns out it was an accident.
Yeah, go figure.
And that's perfectly reasonable. This is not like an unbelievable thing. But again, in the story,
coincidences happen sometimes.
Yeah, this pushes us to like them, like,
we must seek them out.
Admiral Satie. And I think that's the important thing here, is that all of what Satie is doing throughout this episode works in the context of building upon initial coincidences and applying a plausible theory, because that's the danger in this type of thinking, right? The danger is not as much crazy ideas, although that can be a danger too. The danger as presented in this episode is somebody can come up with a plausible scenario based off of the facts that everyone agrees to, and then can ruin somebody's life, or can ruin all sorts of things based on a plausible scenario that is not actually what happened.
And it's like they're trying to go a little bit backwards in the order of things. Instead of putting together facts to come to a conclusion, they have a conclusion they're trying to reach. And then they're trying to put together the logic to make that road there, which can be done. Like,
you can do that with anything.
You do that with all sorts of things.
Especially if you are an elegant, eloquent old ambassador lady with a bunch of staff helping her out. You have all the trappings of authority. The point is, the reason we have the rules that are designed to constrain abuse of power is because it's so easy to abuse, purposefully or otherwise, right? Because we don't necessarily get the impression that Admiral Satie is like, I just want to fuck people over. Mm-hmm. She probably believes her own shit, right? Which is even a bigger threat.
Well, I mean, I think
she's just willing to do whatever she wants because to feel relevant.
I think part of her also just wants to win. Like, because I mean, the way her dad gamified debating for them as
agreed.
A kid.
Agreed.
And then once you talked about how he would always be delighted when she got some kind of subtle point of logic. Yes. It was a
father loved it when I nailed one of them with some subtle point of logic.
Yeah. And like
logic,
right? And that's almost kind of like saying, when I got them on a technicality, that can be construed like that because it's like the person said something incorrectly. I abused the way they said that and turned it around on them. It doesn't mean that when you start doing that, you're starting to get away from being concerned with the truth and you're more concerned about winning the fight, because it starts to change the topic away from what the truth is and more turns the attack towards the other debater. Yeah,
it's a judo, like using their verbal judo.
Yeah. It's using their words against them. And so it's not, so it's clever and it's good for debating and stuff. And there's a time and place for it, but not when you're talking about someone else's life.
Well, and so my dad's whole career, he was a lawyer. He was an attorney. And I remember him telling me once, he's like, the problem is that the law has nothing to do with the truth. The law, all the law is about is putting forward logically consistent systems and or traps or what have you.
Yeah.
But the truth is not really part of the equation. Whereas the scientific method, it can still be flawed because it's done by people. But in principle, the idea is you do the opposite. Is you do exactly what you were saying, Dan, which is if you come up with an idea, you should now spend a lot of time attacking your own idea and getting other people to attack it and from every other angle and from every angle until you can figure out, does it really stand up to all this shit? And then even then you have to be like, it stood up so far, but there might be something we're missing, but thus far it's pretty good. And Satie is not doing that. On the other hand, I did not see evidence, as I was saying earlier, I did not see evidence that Satie was like, I want to fuck this guy in particular, or I want to fuck mixed race people or any, like there was none of that. She didn't have that kind of agenda. No, I agree with you.
She just wanted to win.
She wanted to win. I think she wanted to be relevant. There was this focus on her being quote unquote pulled out of retirement, right? So you, I think if we piece together the timeline, she's retired 4 years ago and has been doing just basically, I think being a fucking busybody the last four years, that's what it sounded like. She's like, I live on spaceships and shuttlecrafts and space stations. It's like, yeah, you're just going around the fucking universe haranguing people because you got, you retired from being a full-time admiral. But it's, we know the type. We've encountered the type.
And it's all she's thinking about are these kinds of debates. So it's like pretty much all she like is interested in doing. So she's getting a little bit insular about the whole thing.
Insular means like an island.
Yeah. Her thoughts were
Over pertaining to an island.
There was an exchange with between us Sabin and Tarsus that was good. When we're talking about like
quick sidebar.
Yeah.
Sabin, it wasn't that, isn't that like an animation company?
Isn't that like Saban or something?
Oh yeah, that's probably like Saban. That's Saban.
Is it Saban?
Well, I always in my head pronounced it Sabin, but this guy is spelled like Sabin, right?
Is it like a toy company?
BVS Entertainment Inc., previously known as Sabin Productions, Sabin Entertainment, and Sabin International, is a subsidiary of the Walt Disney Company. Anyway, this guy is Sabin. Okay, sorry.
Sabotage.
Sabotaged.
Sabotage.
Sabotage. No sabotage.
No sabotage.
This wasn't sabotage at all. It was nothing more than an accident.
Sabotage. No sabotage.
No sabotage.
Sabotaged.
Well, where's the Kirk one? You gotta throw the Kirk one in. Come on.
Which one?
Sabotage.
Yes! What are you talking
sabotage.
About?
Sabotage.
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 No sabotage.
Sabotage.
No sabotage.
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 No sabotage.
Sabotage.
I'm not joking, Lee!
No sabotage. Sabotage.
Sabotaged.
Sabotage.
Sabotage. Sabotage.
No sabotage.
No sabotage.
No sabotage.
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 No sabotage.
No sabotage.
No sabotage.
Sabotage. Sabotage.
Sabotage. Sabotage.
Sabotaged.
This wasn't sabotage at all. It was nothing more than
an accident.
No sabotage.
Sabotage.
I don't get it.
Yeah. You get it, Dan. You get it, Dan.
Yeah, so...
You can get it.
So from Sabin said, Jadan...
Lieutenant Jadan.
Jadan.
Lieutenant Jadan.
Jadan.
Jadan. Dan.
Dan.
Hey, you're Dan.
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 Dan. Jadan. Dan. Jadan. Dan.
Lieutenant Jadan. Dan. Dan. Lieutenant Jadan.
Dan. Jadan. Dan.
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 Jadan. Dan.
Lieutenant Jadan.
Dan.
Lieutenant Jadan.
Dan.
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 Dan. Lieutenant Jadan.
Dan.
Dan. Lieutenant Jadan.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
Jadan. Dan.
Sorry. Okay. Sorry, new listeners. I am sorry. However, again.
You think we've come so far?
Again, it is indicative.
You think we've come so far? You think we've come so far?
You
think we've come so far? You think we've come so far?
Yeah. What was Saban saying?
Balthazar syndrome. Balthazar syndrome. Balthazar syndrome. Balthazar syndrome.
Jadan. Oh yeah, Jadan. Okay, so this was an exchange between Saban and Tarsus. Back to here. And it was talking about, and we were talking about like, you know, sort of like, you know, what makes incriminate someone, things like that. So Saban says to Tarsus, he says, Jadan used...
Sorry. You know the way you phrase that.
I know.
So Mabel says to Bill, she says.
So I says to Mabel, I says.
I says.
I says.
He says.
Jadan.
Dan, Jadan.
Done.
Lieutenant Jadan.
Okay, so save. Oh my gosh, we're getting in some kind of loop.
You are.
Well, you're not helping.
I'm observing, buddy.
No, you're
time is moving forward. It's like perfectly. It's like
right when I stopped. Right when I stopped the first time, you spotted up some music, and then keep going again. So every time I stop, you get it going again. So you are not without blame, sir. You are not without blame.
Boop.
Talk.
Do you have where he says, Jadan says mewling babies?
No, I didn't get the mewling babies when I thought about it, but yeah. I should have gotten mewling.
I was like, anytime somebody uses the word mewling. I know.
I was thinking the same actual. I was this close, Patrick. I was this close.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You can't get everything.
That is the price we have to continually pay.
Of course.
Okay, I'm trying to get this part out. Say, yeah. Okay, Saban says to Tarsus, he says.
I do not understand.
Yes. Okay.
Let's keep our priorities straight.
Yes, indeed.
Saban says, Jadan used suspensions of deoxyribose to carry the encoded files he stole. Isn't it true one of your duties is to prepare those suspensions? Tarsus says, several technicians share that job. So you see, he's throwing out accusatory lines at him, saying like, that's one of your jobs to do that thing that like involved in the thing that blew up. And he's like, but a lot of people do that. And then he goes and does the same thing again with something else. He goes, isn't it true that your security clearance allows you access to all the stores and files in sickbay? Mm-hmm. Access which you can exercise at any time. And he's like, I have access. So what? Doesn't mean I used it. You know, these are all circumstantial things. And he's like stringing together a whole bunch of them. You know, someone's not a murderer just because they have means to murder someone. Yeah. You know,
that's the definition of circumstantial
evidence. Yeah. And then the last one, he says, what would you say if I told you there is evidence that the explosion is in the engine room? Explosion in the engine room was caused by a corrosive chemical.
Yeah.
One that is kept stored in sickbay. And he just goes, I had nothing to do with that. Yeah. But like, he's throwing out all these series of like,
and the last one, he just lied.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
It's not even a theory. It's right. He knows it's a lie.
Yeah, he just said some shit. So right, and so and it's kind of like if you hammer someone enough with something, I guess you're hoping that people will eventually just start believing it as fact, or it'll also make the person all stressed out and make them look guilty or something.
Well, you mentioned last week, something you mentioned last week came up. I was thinking of you, Dan, when I was watching this episode. I was thinking of you.
He's lying.
Because last week when we were discussing DS9's Inquisition,
yes,
which is the introduction of Section 31 and a brilliant, wonderful episode.
Yeah.
It surprised the hell out of me.
You were talking about Sloane interrogating Bashir and using the tactic of using someone's trauma as a way to prove that they were involved in a crime or to suggest they were, right? So in other words, in that case, it was Bashir was a prisoner of war. And so by that definition, he was in a position to be tortured and turned into a traitor.
Right. Yeah. Right?
They do the same thing in this episode, particularly with Picard and his experience with the Borg. They're right. Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How's that whole Borg being Locutus of Borg? You killed all those Starfleet. How's that? How are you even sleeping at night?
Yeah, right. She's like, oh, it must be awful. That must be terrible.
One of
right?
the most terrible traumas one could imagine in a sci-fi context, right? It was really like, it's classic for a reason. Like Picard being turned into Locutus, we won't get into that now, but most audience members will know. Yes. Very traumatic.
You have no right to do this, Sloane.
Sloane!
Sloane! Sloane! Sloane!
Using somebody's trauma to incriminate them.
Right.
Fucked up.
Yeah, it's fucked up. You're using someone's trauma. Yeah, because like you had to experience the pain of this trauma, and then you take someone using that pain of your trauma, like that, by virtue of having this trauma put on you, it somehow gives someone else a weapon to use on you. And so like now that because you've had this trauma, you're now vulnerable to this other attack. And then because of that, you also get people start to mistrust you in general. When this whole time you did nothing wrong. It's just all this wrong shit happened to you. And so a lot of assumptions get made about who you are now after that has happened to you.
And you know what they say about making assumptions.
That proves nothing.
You know, the whole asshole.
Yeah.
You put an asshole. I can't remember the the phrase. People at home remember what it was.
I think it's when people assume.
Yeah. Assumption. Assumption is a part, is like assuming.
It's
like,
yeah, but I mean the joke.
It's
only,
like the noun of an assumption.
Yeah, I know, but the thing you're trying
verb.
To say.
It's the noun of the verb.
The
target.
The thing you.
See, this is why we need Jesse here. Jesse would be all like, meh.
I think I brain fog.
Boobity, boobity, boobity.
I think I brain fog because I really can't remember the words that I need to use in order to get ideas across.
Words aren't that important for the modern podcasters.
The clever thing
you don't like words.
The clever thing you're
anyway.
Trying to say only works if you say assume, because it's like when you assume, you make an ass out of you and me. But you can't use that for assumption. It doesn't make any sense.
Getting back to the old conversation, I remember.
Wait. You're just gonna pass. You're just gonna flip, fly right over that.
No, I had nothing to contribute to the conversation. You're right.
Okay. Well. Yeah. Okay. Well, I was quickly gonna. There's actually one final thing Saban did in that exchange with him
good.
And Tarsus.
Oh, I'm excited.
So first he's like, your job caused you to be at a place where you could do this thing, and he's like, well, several people have that job that I can do it, and then he's like, well, you have access. He's like, well. So what? Doesn't mean I took advantage of that access. You did some shit. And it's like, I don't know anything about that. And then he tops it off with, which is ironic. I think would be ironic. He lies to Tarsus. Yes. But then Tarsus is like, I didn't have anything to do with that thing that he made up. And Saban responds like, how can we believe you? How can we believe someone when we know that they are a liar?
Yeah.
You know, when someone whom we know to be a liar.
Yeah.
So he's lying to Tarsus, and he's saying that lie is true because Tarsus is the liar.
Yeah.
And Tarsus is the one, in fact, lying when it's actually, Saban is lying. And it's
what a dickhead.
Yeah, I know. And it's also using words like calling someone a liar. Like, it's not like you are it's not a binary thing. It's not like you are either a liar or not a liar. You are lying or you're not lying, but someone is not a liar. Like, it's like, I mean, I guess you could have someone who lies so much that you can, you know, sort of colloquially say, oh yeah, watch out, that dude's a liar.
Or if they transmogrified into a Greek instrument.
So, like,
Jesse would have laughed at that. If Jesse were here, he would have totally laughed at that joke. I know that joke is going
to
make
that doesn't
mad.
Make any that doesn't matter to me. Like, I don't care who would have laughed at that joke.
I'm offering a hypothesis for an alternative version of this particular
podcast. All I was saying is that you can say someone casually is a liar, and that makes sense because you know what they're talking about. But it seems like in a court, you shouldn't be using words like a liar. You can say like they're lying. What you're saying is lying, but to say someone is a liar is to say you are this type of person. Therefore, like everything you say is fucked up.
And it's almost comical because it's like it turns into one of those things where it's like the guy guarding the door to heaven always lies, and the guy guarding the door to hell like never lies or whatever, you know. I mean, maybe, you know,
the guy who goes up is actually left, and the guy who's down only says up.
Well, I think
how do I go around in a circle?
There's an even more insidious aspect to that particular scene, or
yes, of course, proceed,
or to the scene. Remember when they have, you know, they've invited all these people. They've opened.
Oh yes, I remember that.
They opened the hearing to the public.
Oh yeah, there was a bunch of fucked up shit.
And then they're accusing Tarsus of lying. And as you just noted, he's actually, you know, Saban is lying when he's accusing Tarsus of lying.
Right.
But it's not just a tactic for getting at Tarsus to admit something or whatever. He's also now told the public audience, he's lied to the audience because now they've overheard, oh, we understand that the explosion's not an accident, that it's actually a terrorist attack of some sort. So that's one thing the audience is thinking. And they're thinking, oh, Simon Tarsus is involved with it. So he's attempting anyway. I don't know how successful he was, but Saban is explicitly attempting to get the public to turn against Tarsus because that's a classic move, fascist move. Ideally, you don't just have the court say this guy is guilty. You want the public to think he's guilty too. So that even if he somehow squirrels out of this court thing, they'll fuck him up. They'll hunt him down because at least one of them will think he's guilty.
I think actually it was Satie who opened the courtroom up.
Yes, but he was the one, you know, doing the actual interrogation. So that's why, you're right. But that's why I was kind of like focusing on him because of his words being so acutely like this, the way he phrased everything was to really incite people into hating Tarsus, despite having zero proof of him being involved in any way.
Yeah, like she did it without, she opened it up without telling Picard because she like knew that would like throw him off too. Mm-hmm. She knew he'd say no, and she also wanted to throw him off.
Performative.
Yeah, and so and because they were the whole time they started the whole thing as like this is just an informal inquiry.
Yeah.
The whole time it began as like, oh, this is nothing. Don't even worry about it. It's just an informal inquiry. But what by doing this, it's one step closer to being like a formal hearing. Mm-hmm. Like it's becoming from an informal inquiry to a formal like court hearing. Even though it may not be technically called that, by opening it to the public, you know, by like grilling this dude in front of people.
All the trappings of a trial.
Yeah.
Which is what Picard basically says at the end.
And Picard at the beginning was telling him, he's like, he was even telling Tarsus, he was like, this is just informal inquiry. And like, that's not.
Yo, bro, chill. It's all good.
And that's what he thought it was going to be. But Satie like turned it, was everything she did was trying to turn it closer and closer to some sort of like indictment.
And then to add further insult to injury, Tarsus, he's nervous. He incriminates himself a little bit from being nervous. But that's because he lied on an application to Starfleet, just not to the academy. But he lied because he was worried about racism.
Yeah, right, exactly. He lied. He lied because he knew that he would probably.
He suspected it might be a problem.
Yeah, he suspected that his
Romulan.
That his Romulan blood would prevent him from getting into Starfleet. So he lied so that wouldn't be a problem.
Because Starfleet's not perfect. It still has racists.
And so it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy on their end of like the whole thing is like. You know, because you're yelling at me because I'm Romulan, but the reason I lied about the thing is because I didn't want to, because I knew you were yelling at me about, I knew this would happen if you knew.
Which has happened in real life, by the way. It happened in Germany with people of Jewish descent. It happened in the United States with people of many different races and religions, but trying to disassociate themselves in order to avoid persecution. In Russia, you know, all over, this is not, sadly, not uncommon in human history for people to lie about some aspect of their life that is perfectly innocent, but could nevertheless cause them to
lose their credibility and things like that, even though it's just one little thing. Yeah. And like, it's that people, when they don't, it's not looking at the context of the situation of, it's like, not all lies are the same, you know, like depending on the circumstance, some lies are like that one. It's like, no, it's not good to lie about stuff like that. But like, you need to take into account the situation surrounding it. And the situation surrounding it is that there's a bunch of racist ideas going around. Yeah. Like, so
I want you to write a book called Dan's Book of Lies, where you just sort of kind of categorize and list examples of all the various different types of lies.
Why do you think I would be good at that?
I just kind of like to read a book that you wrote.
Very well.
And that's as good a topic as any.
It is as any. It sure is.
And this is as good a time as any to take a break.
What? Is it already that time?
just about time to take a break. Any final, not final points, pre-break points?
Well, let's see. We were talking about Tarsus lying. Yeah. And then like, oh yeah, because like now like they can get him for being Romulan and a liar, but he got some time to be on the Enterprise that he wouldn't have gotten had he told the truth initially. Is worse. So in the end,
tis better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. Is that what you're getting at, Dan?
Yeah, precisely.
Except the professional equivalent of that.
Yeah, and his version of lost is now they think he's a liar on top of being a Romulan,
which is very different than ABC's version lost.
Or they think he's a liar on top of being a slimy Romulan. That's what they, because Romulans aren't inherently bad, but they think Romulans are slimy, you know?
Like snakes. Do you think Cardassians are slimy?
Didn't
like,
we have this discussion?
Because snakes are not slimy. Feel awesome. Snake flesh is delicious. Lizard flesh.
Didn't we have this discussion?
We may have.
Do you think like frog flesh is slimy?
Yeah, frog flesh can be, and not necessarily toad flesh is a little drier. I've held frogs, toads, snakes, lizards, you name it.
Have you held it?
I fucking held it.
Have you held it in your mouth and then in your stomach?
You know, I do have a vague memory of putting a frog in my mouth. I don't know if that's a...
I beg your pardon?
I don't know if that actually happened or if that was a dream.
Were you trying to get high?
No, I don't think I was trying to get high. I think I did a.
Well, who did?
I think I did a funny gag.
I think I did a funny gag.
Putting a little small frog in my mouth and being like, ah.
Do we know that for sure?
But I don't know for sure.
Must have been awful for you.
No, my memory of it is quite exhilarating, actually.
I question your actions, Captain. I question your choices. I question your loyalty.
Well, how about this? Let's go ahead and take that break I was talking about, and then when we get back, we will conclude our discussion of The Drumhead. Be right back.
I have nothing more to say.
All right, we're back.
Oh, no.
No, we are. Indeed, we are.
It's true. We wouldn't lie to you.
Okay. The show was Star Trek The Next Generation, Drumhead. Drumhead.
Hooray.
Hey, we're back.
Wow, yay.
Yes, Miss LaForge.
I thought it was funny. Look, this is a very well-written show. Very well-acted as well. However, I did think... I did think it was kind of funny. A few lines here and there were kind of odd. Like it near the beginning, after Satie talks with Worf, she then goes to Picard and she's like, I think that officer is going to be really integral to this investigation. And the first thing I'm like, oh, you think like the head of security is going to be integral to the fucking investigation? What are you talking about? What the fuck does that mean? Like, I know we were supposed to get that, like, Satie is like in the Worf. She's like, right. She's like rocking his vibe because she knows he's going all fascist, like in a pinch.
Mm-hmm.
That guy was all about like immediately like getting everyone. He was inviting everyone to the fucking conference room. His whole team. He's like, all right, here's security team. Here's how you're gonna rough up all your friends on the Enterprise. Here's how we're gonna go to interview each and every one of these motherfuckers that you know and love and have worked with for years. Here's how we're gonna fuck up their days. That was Worf. Was so excited to do that. It really pissed me off.
You sound really worked up over it.
But the thing is, it was totally in character for Worf. So it's great. Mm-hmm. It works. But it's upsetting. That's why it's upsetting. Right? This is not a case of Voyager writing the character to like do what they need in his plot. Like this totally makes sense for Worf to get overexcited about getting to fuck everyone's day up. And not because he's a dickhead. He's not. It's just that he honestly thinks, like, he wants to be useful, and he thinks this is a way he can be useful, is being like, I'm gonna fucking interrogate everybody.
Yeah, but he was pretty smart when he figured out that whole data being transmitted over...
He's a good officer.
Like, biomaterial or whatever.
He knows his shit.
Over biology.
Yeah, but, and Worf was proceeding...
Like, he knew his
from
shit.
A position he knew the guy was lying.
He had good reason to think that
Jadan was lying.
He knew his shit more than he usually does, I feel, in the episode.
I don't know. I'm one of the people that, like, look, there's an argument to be made that, like, a lot of times Worf's advice was the correct advice, and that the plot of the episode just wouldn't have happened because they would have solved the problem earlier.
That's an interesting viewpoint.
But not always. I mean, Worf is often like, we should shoot these people. And they're like, no, let's not shoot the people. And then later it's like, oh, man, if we'd only shot those people, we would have been fine. Okay, look, maybe it's not the best choice, but Worf is not always wrong, necessarily.
She was saying, one point she said, Captain, I always preferred working alone.
Yes, that she way, makes a big deal about
She goes,
it.
That way if something goes wrong, I don't have to go far for the cause.
Because she's so narcissistic that she thinks that she
People are going to holding her back or something?
No. What she's saying is that, look, it's the classic statement that sounds like it's being humble, but it is actually one of the most arrogant things you can say. What she's saying is, if I'm working alone, if something's not going right, I know the problem's with me. That's what she's saying. Humble. She's saying, I don't have to look far because I know it's me that's the problem. It sounds humble, but what it's actually saying is I'm so fucking important to the universe that anything right or wrong that happens revolves around me. I'm the only one who has the power to do it right. I'm the only one who has the power to even do it wrong. It's not somebody else's mistake. It's not some external thing. It's not some circumstantial thing that causes the problem in my investigation. It's me, right? I think that's one of those crazy things that people say that we sometimes don't pay attention to how crazy it is. Feedback at itscottstartrek.com. Is Patrick crazy?
Is Patrick crazy? Yeah. I vote yes. You're a crazy dingus is what you are.
Indeed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. It looked like you were about to say something.
Oh, no. There was actually one part in the I was looking for. I can't find it right now. But where she said like one thing and then like she like turned around and said something else. That she kept focusing on different things. And it doesn't make any sense unless I can find it. So
It is an enticing thing. How about this? I will make a comment while you continue to search for the thing that relates to your comment that you've enticed us about.
Okay. I've enticed you all.
You've enticed me. So with the Tarsus thing, yes, he got nervous and we know why, but also sort of generically, people get nervous talking around cops. People get nervous talking around authority figures. People get nervous talking to Penn and Teller. Like you get nervous talking to people that are culturally and systemically in positions of power or authority in whatever criteria you might apply to that. People get nervous, right? Mm-hmm. That's normal. And in fact, you should be suspicious of the people who aren't nervous about being grilled by cops because it's an inherently difficult thing. And now, while we are given a reason to as to why Tarsus is in particular is nervous, it would also be perfectly rational to be like, guess what? That's my coworker. He gets a little nervous in these situations.
Yeah, some people get way nervous.
And it's not anything that does not in any way indicate that he's a bad person or has done anything wrong in his life at all, including lying on an application. There's none of that. It's just some people are just... can't deal with the stress of that kind
it's
of interaction.
It's bullshit when they say like, oh, why is your heart beating so fast? You know,
I hate
it's
that
like,
shit.
It's like, because I'm fucking being accused of some fucked up shit and I'm not good with that.
Yeah.
I found what I was going to say.
Okay, buddy. Good.
Okay, good.
Now, audience, you might recall that a few minutes ago, Dan enticed us with some gobbledygook about some business.
Yeah.
And he did not have the supporting evidence, but now he has gathered that evidence and he's ready to present it. Let's hear it, Dan.
Okay. So this was when Picard was like came in, was shocked that she opened the hearing up to spectators. He's like, you opened up the hearing to spectators. And she says, it isn't, this is, she makes two different points that it's like she changes her argument. She goes, it isn't good to have closed door proceedings for too long. It invites rumor and speculation. Okay. So she's basically.
Argument number one
is she's saying that like, we're doing it for the benefit, I'm doing it for everyone's benefit. I'm doing it for the benefit of like.
Mr. Kite. Mr. All the rest of
I'm doing it for the benefit of the innocent because basically because we don't want people to start thinking negative thoughts, and so we're letting them in when things are closed door for too long, people gossip and make up dumb shit. So she's doing it seems like a benevolent sort of reason. But then Ben Picard goes, nevertheless, Admiral, I think it would be wise ... and then she cuts him off and she says, because spies and saboteurs don't like the bright light of an open inquiry.
Yeah.
They're like roaches scurrying for the dark corner. She goes from talking about how it's good to have open door proceedings so people don't gossip to we're gonna suss out the spy this way.
Yeah.
It's like, well, which one is it? Are you opening it up for the benefit of transparency, or are you doing it to shine the magnifying glass on the spy and like point him out?
I don't entirely buy her argument.
It's like the second one doesn't follow the first argument.
No, it's disconnected,
and she begins the second one with the word because.
Yeah, but also
she goes, it isn't good to have closed door proceedings for too long. Invites rumor and speculation ... because spies and saboteurs don't like the bright light of an open inquiry. They're like roaches scurrying for the dark corner. It's like a non sequitur almost, it feels like.
Yeah, and I also just don't agree with the conclusion or the assertion, because wouldn't a spy be more freaked out by a closed door session that they know is happening, but they don't know exactly what's talking about in there, so they don't know what evidence is being presented and stuff? That might make me more nervous as a spy, more likely to make a mistake than a public one. I don't know. I'm not familiar with this. I'm just saying it wasn't a fully convincing argument. Did demonstrate that she's has the capacity to freak out, which probably was helpful for Picard when he was formulating his strategy for dealing with this whole thing.
After that part where she pointed out the Borg thing and he put his head in his hands.
Yeah, the meme picture, the famous exasperated Picard meme.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I knew I recognized that from somewhere. At first, it looks like he's like all bummed out because she's bringing up some real upsetting traumatic shit, but really he's more bummed out about the state of Starfleet at that moment.
Yes.
And so it's interesting because that for a second I thought he was like stressed out that she was talking to him like that, but he was more stressed out about he was more sad about the state of affairs. And that's when he came out with that line, and like you could tell she was going off the rails when she turned it from like she was focused on indicting Tarsus the whole time. And then suddenly, she was so focused on just winning about Tarsus, but suddenly it stopped being about Tarsus at all.
Yeah.
It moved over to Picard. And then when Worf bothered to step up for a second, she spun around to him. She's like, you're probably guilty too.
Yeah, yeah.
She just starts throwing her finger at everyone.
Guilty.
You're all guilty. And then all she cares about is she's laser focused on fucking Picard. And then it finally cracks when she's like, I've taken down bigger men than you. And that's when everyone's like, whoa, okay. this isn't about the whole crime that happened anymore, is it? You're just like wanting to win this thing.
The crime that never happened.
Yeah, and then when Picard's just sitting there looking at her, he's like, yep, doing the work for me right now, you know? He's just, I mean, he's not taking any joy in it, obviously, but he's just looking, like some other people are like, whoa, but Picard's just like, he was like, that's what I thought might happen.
Well, and we touched on it earlier, but
he was probably more just like disgraceful.
This episode really does demonstrate how swiftly something like an unusual but not impossible accident or series of coincidences can result in a number of people barreling down a dangerous road, and that the only thing that prevents it is Picard and others trying to rely on the guardrails that are supposed to be put in place. But in this episode, those guardrails are loose because Admiral Satie is a fucking admiral. And she's like, guess what? I'm calling in my fucking friends. I don't have to listen to you. I can do whatever the fuck I want because I have authority. And it's only the fact that the admiral that she brings in witnesses her basically have a mental breakdown in front of everybody.
Yeah. Even her, like, her sidekick is like shaking her head. Like,
yeah, both of her sidekicks, Sabin also is just sort of like, oh man.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's a fucking piece of shit. He was
an asshole.
He is awful.
We're waiting, Mr. Tarsus.
But Satie, you know, she also just assumes there's a conspiracy way before. I mean, there's never any evidence that there's a conspiracy. It's there's an explosion and there's a spy. Then there's an assumption that, oh, maybe he caused the explosion. Oh, it turns out it wasn't a sabotage anyway. It was just an accident. And we have a spy. Mystery
sabotage.
Solved. Not that big a deal. Not that complicated. Most straightforward solution. No, she had to, like you said, Dan, she had to keep going. And like I said, she had to be useful and relevant. Mm-hmm. And so she just invents conspiracies on the flagship of the Federation and ultimately ends up accusing one of the most decorated Starfleet officers in service
of
being a traitor and helping the fucking Romulans of all people.
Right.
Now, granted, he does eventually help the Romulans quite significantly throughout his career, so maybe Admiral Satie was on to something this whole time. He consorts with a Romulan one, an Irish Romulan at that.
Oh man, Star Trek and the Irish.
Yeah, Star Trek and the Irish indeed.
Yeah. Well, she had a lot of these tactics. I think, for example, like when she says,
I can scarcely believe it myself.
No, no, it's this one.
I cannot possibly believe you mean this.
That was like right after Picard was trying to call her out for some shit.
I think he was trying to call off the, was that when he was trying to call off the hearing?
Oh yeah, he says this must stop. It's gone. Yeah, it's what basically he wanted to stop the whole thing. And then when he was like pointed out the lie, you know, he was like, there is no chemicals there. And then she was like, he was like, it's a lie. And it's like, she was like, it's a tactic, you know. I think part of me thinks that she kind of suspected that Picard was going to get to this point at some point. Mm-hmm. I think she's that good because she already had it in the works that she was going to get that Starfleet was going to come over and start investigating everybody. So I think when she was like, I can't possibly believe you'd think this way. I think that was performative because when he was talking about like when Picard stands up to her, he's like, I'm going to stand up to you. And she's like, yeah, well, I've got my friends coming, you know? And so she already had that in the works. It's like she was already planning ahead. So she already sort of thought about that possibility. So everything it seemed like that she was doing was every time she talked, it seemed like there was a tactic. Like at the beginning of the trial, there was a double tactic from him and her. Picard goes, if you don't mind, I'd like to open with a statement. And she's like, yeah, I do mind. You do it later.
I know, right?
And he's like, well, actually, you don't have a choice, basically. So it was a tactic on her end because she knew that he.
It was also a test of whether or not the rules still applied, because fundamentally, that's an example of you're dealing with a shady admiral who's technically running and in charge of this session. This other admiral is only there for observation. And so Picard was not pushing the envelope. He was making the point. He's like, I'm going to demand to say a statement. It's in the rules that I'm allowed to say a statement. So if you stop me from saying a statement, you invalidate this hearing immediately.
Well, that's why I was saying it was kind of a thing from both sides. Because from her side, she was seeing what she could get away with. Yeah. She was seeing if she could get. She knew the rule. She knew like that rule, and she was saying like, no, you can't do it, because she was trying to push her boundaries on that. And Picard was very carefully used the words, if you don't mind, meaning if it's all right with with you, I'm going to do that, knowing full well that he had all the right to do it. So it's like they're sort of feeling each other's, mm-hmm. like feeling each other out there, pushing each other's boundaries.
Feeling each other's butts.
No.
Oh.
Why would I say butts?
I was confused by that too, but I got a hint of a b-b-b-b. Just a b-b-b.
They were feeling each other out. They were pushing each other's boundaries.
Boundaries. Okay, I gotcha. The
boundaries. Oh, I gotcha. Boundaries. Oh, I got what you mean. You said boundaries. I got what you mean. Oh, I got what you mean.
I know.
I got what you mean.
I know it's before the.
I
know it's before the Picard interrogation. But I think where Picard, I think he made an error. He might have made a few errors in this episode, but. When he let Satie and Saban continue to investigate Tarsus after they came up with that whole, like, if anything, we're doing it to prove his innocence.
Right.
No.
I'll fight it.
That's where he didn't fight it. And I think the rest of the episode, he's making up for that error. They didn't cite it explicitly, but for my money, I think that's the point where you nip it in the bud. You're like, mm-hmm. No, you're not going to continue this. He doesn't need to prove his innocence. That's not necessary.
Yeah, that's
not a necessary thing here.
Yeah, so Picard goes,
this is not a case.
The lie, and the thing Picard says, he says, we are hounding an innocent man. And she goes, how, may I ask, have you managed to determine that? You don't determine innocence, you determine guilt.
Yeah.
Like, and so she's already coming from the angle of guilty until proven innocent. Kind
precisely,
of.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Fucked up. These people are fucked up.
And then there was one part where she goes, she's like talking down to him, going like, how can you be so naive? So she's now just resorted to an insult, mm-hmm. insults as a tactic. Mm-hmm. And then, but then she goes on to say in that same scene, she goes, there have been others in the past who doubted me. They came to regret it. So in that same scene, she like first insults him and then she threatens him, like right after that. Like she's like doing everything she's doing. If you watch this episode, everything she's doing is a tactic, which is pretty interesting.
And by the way, those are also tactics, at least on the intellectual plane, when you're talking about sort of from a rhetorical perspective, those are weak tactics. Those are tactics that indicate you're coming from a position of weakness because you're relying on bludgeoning tactics that don't hold up. There's no logic underpinning them. She's not winning with logic. She's winning with threats.
I mean, in a way, that's what they were doing in Inquisition was doing too. That he was resorting
100%.
Yeah, they just tactics where you're brute force, blunt object, just hitting him from all different angles to try to rattle him.
Now,
basically.
In the case of Inquisition, Sloane's purpose was not to find any sort of truth. His purpose was explicitly to stress out Julian. He was testing Julian, right?
Well,
in this case,
I don't know if I agree with that.
Well, that's the case.
How can you say that's the case?
Well, please refer to last week's episode.
And we have that discussion, and I never agree with. I say my argument is that it's possible that he did think Julian did this, and over the course of the interrogation, he became impressed with Julian. He went from thinking he was guilty to being impressed with him. And during the course of the episode, that's when he decided to recruit him. He was going to indict him, but he ended up recruiting
regardless,
him.
My point still
stands. Wait, you said excellent. You said it in a way where you totally didn't think it was excellent. You totally don't think that's
totally
excellent.
It's totally radical.
You said
totally
that.
Ridiculous.
You said that in a way. I said I don't agree. That's what you're saying.
I said that in a way that we have to remain on topic for the very small amount of time we have left.
You have no right to do this, Sloane.
Remaining in this week's podcast. Because the point I was
trying to... You think you're smarter than the rest of us, don't you?
The point I was trying to get at is that Sloane and Section 31 are shady, and their whole goal is we're saving Starfleet. That's their perspective. But they're pretty competent about it. At least Deep Space Nine version of Section 31 is competent. Later versions of Section 31 appear to be anything but.
The clown show.
But
they hire the rejects.
But the original conception with Sloane, he knows exactly what he's doing. And again, I'm asserting he was not trying to get at any sort of truth or anything. Now, by the way,
I agree it would be difficult.
Satie is, I think, very incompetent. She's got no real purpose other than, I agree with you, Dan, to win. She thinks she's finding a truth, but it's not. She doesn't actually know what she's doing. She's just fucking running around doing crazy shit fucking ego. She thinks she's saving Starfleet, but she's not. She's just trying to save her own ego.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Ruining lives in the process.
I mean, yeah, like I said, she definitely just wants to win, but were you
and
saying
she
that,
loses in
but
the
you're
end.
Saying that she's incompetent, like she's, it's, I think she, it's, it points out that she has made a life out of this job.
She's incompetent if the goal if the goal is to actually like find the truth and solve problems, she's not competent.
No. But I'm saying she's good at the game, though. The gaming aspect of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but that's, to me, that's irrelevant because it's like, she loses in the end here because she's not actually going for
the... But with her father, the reason her father gamified all this stuff is because he was trying to teach them to be good at that kind of, world. I bet she can probably maneuver herself in that world. I'm not saying that that's good.
Let me try to put my point a different way. In this episode...
Yes, of course, proceed, Mr.
She comes to the Enterprise... she talks to Geordi and Data. Worf figures out the way the spy was transmitting the data. Problem solved. She shakes hands. She thanks everybody. And she's like, excellent. And then leaves the ship. And you know what? Her reputation is intact. And she gets to go harangue some other people, solve some other minor mystery somewhere else. Mm. She loses because she maybe used to be better at the gaming of it. Her skills are failing because she pushed it too far, and she pushed it too far in the wrong place. She was trying to harangue an innocent person, and then she was trying to harangue accuse Picard of being a traitor. She overstepped her actual capacity. So that's what I'm saying. She made really sort of stupid errors.
She was getting desperate.
That were ego driven. And that's why I was saying earlier, talking about her tactics being tactics that come from a position of weakness. And if she was truly... I'm not saying she didn't, but she probably were led to believe she used to be this brilliant mind. If she truly still was that brilliant tactician, she wouldn't have made those mistakes.
Yeah.
She would have recognized earlier she was in a weak position and not overstepped her bounds.
Right. She resorted to desperate tactics because she was so laser focused on winning. It's precisely her ego wouldn't let her make the proper decision. I can see that angle of it. I thought it was confusing. At the beginning, Picard says, there are disturbing overtones in the idea of a Klingon providing information to the Romulans. Are you aware of any other Klingon-Romulan connection that Starfleet Command might have encountered recently?
Yes.
And this is like right when he meets her, basically. Yeah. His first conversation with her. She goes, I don't believe what Starfleet Command knows or doesn't know is for me to reveal. Like,
first clue that there's something fucked up.
Yeah, why is she being so coy? Like, why is she...
You're supposedly working together and you're not giving Picard information that would be helpful to the investigator.
And then Picard goes on to say, the ship has encountered several incidents which might suggest a potential alliance between those two powers. And she goes, we're aware of that, Captain. What we must concentrate on is the business at hand, which you just said. It's like, this is the business at hand.
This seems to be a Klingon spy giving Romulans information.
I don't know if I should tell you the thing that you need to know. Just like, instead we should focus on the business at hand, which is the thing we're talking about, you know? So yeah, that was interesting. From the get-go, she was shady. There was something shady about her.
There was also, I know this is unrelated, but you made me think for some reason.
I made you think, Patrick.
About how Picard...
made him think.
Picard almost says the title of the episode because he talks about drumhead trials.
Oh, yeah.
A drumhead trial.
Yeah. Yeah.
They should have called this episode A Drumhead, because then he would have said the name of the title of the episode.
Oh, yeah. A Drumhead.
A Drumhead trial.
I wonder if I could... I wonder if it sounds super goofy if he tried to cut that.
Saying...
Drumhead trial. Drumhead trial. Drumhead.
Does that sound like right?
Yeah, but drumhead. You have to add the to the front.
Hey.
Drumhead.
The.
Drumhead.
Drumhead. Drumhead.
Oh, they're right. There's no the.
There's no the.
You drumhead.
The. Oh, check it out.
Drumhead. Drumhead.
That's pretty good.
Drumhead.
Dronehead.
Yeah, it doesn't sound... It kind of... Sometimes you got to ditch them because they just don't sound quite right. The Saban pulled a super, super asshole face move with Worf. Saban goes, you've done a thorough job, Lieutenant. Worf goes, I am strongly motivated in this matter. And then Saban goes, yes, I can see that. I don't mind telling you, I'm surprised. Frankly, when I first heard about your father, like, that's a total setup right there. That's a total setup. Yeah. And then Worf's like, my father? And Worf totally took the bait. Uh-huh. He totally reeled Worf in right from the start with that. That's like the oldest trick.
The second time Worf takes the bait this episode. The first time was with Jadan. Mm-hmm. The second time is with Saban. And then the third time is where he finally learns his lesson after Picard gives him a dirty look and doesn't take that final bait.
He like it's such a cliched bait to take as well. And like him doing the old like, well, if they were a good guy, they'd have nothing to hide.
Precisely,
or whatever that bullshit line is.
Yeah.
Like that. People do actually use that though. They still use it
each and every day.
I can't believe that people take themselves seriously when they say that.
That's because they haven't been on the other side. Well, one day they
must be. And then so Saban says, yes, there are some who believe he betrayed your people to the Romulans. That's pretty ballsy for him to like even bring that shit up. And then Worf, that's when Worf is like, you know, that's not your concern, whatever he says. He says something about what is or is.
What he did or did not do is no one's concern but my own.
Right. So, and then Saban goes on to like tell him, he's like, of course, I only met before I saw you in action. I naturally considered you a possible security risk, but I want you to know you have the admirals in my complete confidence. You have nothing to prove to us. And then we find out at the end, he turns around and uses it on him. He uses it against him at the end of the episode.
And he almost gets killed for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Worf steps up to him. Worf is ready to rip his spine
and
out.
That's where I'm saying, that's where he almost takes the bait, because it's fundamentally the guy's basically baiting him. And then Picard sort of waves Worf off. Finally, Worf doesn't take the bait because Picard knows, in this case, Picard's like, I think I can get her to freak out, and she's going to take the bait. And that's exactly what ends up happening.
Yeah, I wish I could find what part that was.
In my notes, I wrote down wondering if Worf ever tracked down and murdered Saban later for accusing his father of being a Romulan collaborator.
Oh, is that the word he uses, collaborator?
It's not stated outright in this episode, I don't think. Maybe they had some analogy to that, but that is the storyline with Worf, is that his father...
Oh, wait, here... Wait,
the Duras accused his father of being
Here he goes, yeah... Saban goes, don't you think it's questionable judgment, Captain, to have a security officer whose father was a Romulan collaborator?
All right,
so that's exactly what he used. Right. So at the beginning of the episode, he like, you know, baits Worf to test how far he can like kind of manipulate him. And he's like, oh, I was just worried that I couldn't trust you. But now that I've met you, I totally trust you.
Yeah.
But then he turns around at the end and say like, how can you trust this guy? He's a Romulan collaborator. He just like goes totally back on the thing he said. That's a bullshit move.
It is. Are there any, we got to close things down. Are there any duties or no duties or any other clever things?
There is a duty or no duty.
Good.
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 Good. I'm excited. And Jesse's not here, so you can't accuse him of taking my side.
No, I can't. I can do it next week, though.
That's me giving him my coffee.
Jordan used suspensions of deoxyribose to carry the encoded files he stole. Isn't it true one of your duties is to prepare these suspensions? One of your duties is.
I would say that's a duty.
One of your duties is.
To me, that's a duty. It's not a no duty. That's a duty.
That's a max duty.
Yeah. And again, for new listeners, Dan's semi-regular
duties. I am semi-regular.
Duty or no duty game.
Oh, you meant like that.
Yeah. If they said duty, then we're supposed to say no duty.
Yeah.
If they said duty,
right.
It's a childish thing, but it's fun.
It's super fun.
And usually it's a duty in Jesse, in my opinion. And Dan thinks it's duty. I think in this case, it's definitely a duty.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Excellent. Any final thoughts? Otherwise,
the road from
legitimate
suspicion to rampant paranoia is very much shorter than we think.
Paranoia.
All right, this line.
We think we've come so far. Torture of heretics, burning of witches, all ancient history. Then... before you can blink an eye, suddenly it threatens to start all over again.
You know, that is frighteningly relevant.
Yes,
it's very relevant.
I saw a witch just the other day.
Okay, so then Picard says, "Mr. Worf, villains who wear twirl their mustaches are easy to spot," which I think
apparently
is
not.
Yeah, right. That's the thing. It's like those who clothe themselves in
Star Trek is bullshit.
Yeah, those who clothe themselves in good deeds are well camouflaged. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing: what's scary is that you don't really need to camouflage yourself today.
Not anymore.
You don't have to camouflage yourself in good deeds. Nobody's like pretends to be good. They just lie right to your face and you believe them.
Yeah.
The royal you. But you know what I mean? That's the thing is you can just, apparently nowadays you can just lie to people's faces. Yeah. And if you say it with enough conviction, that's all you
Star
need.
Trek
so you can twirl your mustache the whole
Star
time.
Star Trek got two things wrong. One thing is that... yeah, you can be just a total piece of shit.
Yeah.
People eat your shit. They'll just be like, feed me your shit. I'm going to eat your delicious, gross, fucking Big Mac shit all day.
Chief O'Brien.
Weirdly, people love it.
Yeah.
Odd thing. The other thing they got wrong was that you don't need more than one pad.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. But the last line, they take it home again. She or someone like her will always be with us, waiting for the right climate in which to flourish, spreading fear in the name of righteousness. So that one is also, that first and the third line there, that I mentioned, the one that was like, we think we've come so far, and then someone like her will always be with us. Those two lines are like kind of creepy. That this episode, you know, hit pretty well.
No, I agree. Really nicely done. I'm referring to our podcasting.
It's true.
Great job, Dan.
Great job.
And Patrick.
What a great podcast. What is it you said that time? We're great. Or when did you say, like, we're the best podcast ever?
Isn't no, you got it all backwards. I said, what a great show.
Oh, that's right.
And I was referring to the episode we had watched, and you thought I was referring to our podcast. And that was at the beginning of the podcast. So partly you were annoyed by the potential arrogance, but I think even more so, you were just like, we haven't even fucking done the podcast yet. We're at the beginning of the podcast, you're just like assuming it's going to be a great podcast.
Yeah.
And from that perspective, I get it. I respect that.
I don't get it. Well, I don't get it.
You don't get it.
I don't get it.
Where would I stay?
You get it.
Yes, I admit I probably would.
All right. Before we forget, I do think
he was a giant.
The primary moral lesson for this episode is what, Dan? Yes, you guessed it. Don't lie on applications.
Oh.
That's the main takeaway from this episode.
Yeah, that's right.
Just don't.
How can you be so incredibly naive?
Don't lie on an application. All right. That's it for this week.
Yeah. Don't do it.
Next week.
Don't do it.
Next week we're going.
We must seek them out.
We're gonna go go back to TOS.
Who did
Star Trek: The Original Series? And we're gonna watch another classic episode, Patterns of Force.
How can we believe you?
It's you get to see Kirk dressed as a Nazi. It's another
Nazi
episode.
I cannot possibly believe you mean this.
Again, for no particular reason, yeah. we've just been enjoying watching these episodes where Star Trek is fighting fascists.
Yeah.
Or making the point that fascism sucks.
Hey, doesn't this sound like Gaius Baltar?
Baltmazar Syndrome.
Or like Bulbasaur?
Baltmazar Syndrome.
Yeah, sounds more like Bulbasaur.
Gaius Baltar?
Okay, so...
A Heckle syringe he uses to treat his Baltmazar Syndrome.
Is that his name, Gaius Baltar?
Yes, that is...
Or is it like Baltstar or
no,
something?
No, it's Gaius Baltar.
Okay.
That's a different franchise. You can reach us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. On social media, at
It's Got Star Trek. Blood of all Klingons has become water.
Yes, at It's Got Star Trek, wherever, Blue Sky, Threads, all that business.
Blueski!
YouTube, Facebook, all the podcast players, Apple Podcasts, all that business. The website is www.itsgotstartrek.com.
I know nothing about it.
Patreon.com/itsgotstartrek if you want to get some fun, ridiculous bonus content.
He's lying.
Yeah, I think those are the main things. So come join us next week for Patterns of Force. We're looking forward to it. Hope you are too. Until then, goodbye.
We appreciate your time. You're excused.
Blood of all Klingons has become water. Since the Federation Alliance, we are turned into a nation of mewling babies.